Assassin. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we are in the thick of things in these NBA playoffs right now. So let's get right into the week of the NBA playoffs semifinals, beginning with the Philadelphia versus Boston series. That kicked off on Monday night. And Philadelphia, with no Joel Embiid, shocked the world and absolutely, they played really well against the Celtics. I mean, for the most part, they pretty much dominated the whole thing. And it was really weird to see. They did win 119 to 115 and would just, and this was in Boston too, by the way, but James Harden, we're used to playoff Harden, which is usually he just disappears and does nothing. Well, there might be a new playoff Harden, because he dropped a career high 45 points and 6 assists that night. And he made the big shots, especially in the fourth quarter, to help seal the deal and get this win for the Philadelphia 76ers. And then also Tyrese Maxey, he had a big game. He dropped 26 points. Jason Tatum also had a big game. He had 39 points and 11 rebounds for the Celtics. But unfortunately, he really faded away in the fourth quarter. And the Celtics did what I was talking about in the Atlanta Hawks series in the first round. It felt like they didn't want to win. And it just felt like they were just kind of treading water the whole game. And then, like I said, Tatum pretty much faded in the fourth quarter and really was a non-factor. And the 76ers were able to get the shocking win in game one. But then game two went as expected. And actually, it was shocking because Embiid was back. And by the way, Joel Embiid, it was announced earlier this week, he is the MVP of the league. So you would kind of expect the dude to have a big game, and he wasn't like ineffective, but you could really just tell as a whole the 76ers were not playing at their at the highest level in game two, and they actually got stomped by the Celtics 121-87. So the series is tied 1-1. In game two, it was really all about Jaylen Brown. He had 25 points and was just huge getting the rebounds, huge in the paint, made some big defensive plays. Jason Tatum only had 7 points. So it's pretty shocking that when Tatum only has 7 points and he's not the main factor as to why you win, that's a good win for the Celtics. Even though they're still kind of treading water, at least they got a big statement win in game two. And then game three, of course, is tonight. So we'll see how that goes. It's in Philadelphia for this weekend. So we'll see how the rest of that series pans out. Then moving on to the Denver Nuggets versus the Phoenix Suns. They've played one game this week. And it was pretty much Denver Nuggets domination. The first two games so far have been Denver Nuggets domination. The Nuggets got the win 97-87. Right now they have a 2-0 series lead. And, you know, Jokic is just doing what it do. He had 39 points, 16 rebounds, and 5 assists. So, of course, he had a double-double. Shockingly, it wasn't a triple-double. But then you turn to the Phoenix Suns side. Booker, he had a good night, dropped 35 points. Durant had a good night, dropped 24 points. But unfortunately for the Phoenix Suns, Chris Paul is injured. And he did leave this game, which obviously it really did start to have an effect on how the outcome of the game went. But he's definitely not going to be in the rest of this series, however much longer it goes on. And then, of course, if the Phoenix Suns are able to move on to the Western Conference Finals, will he be available then? We do not know. It's pretty much in the air with CP3 right now. It's just yet another star player injured during the playoffs. So that's a huge blow to the Phoenix Suns as well, just because, as I mentioned, their starters have been getting a high volume of minutes, which probably contributes to why Chris Paul is injured. But, you know, at some point it's probably going to cost you a game or two, but now it looks like it's possible it could cost them a series. I still have faith in the Suns. Game three is also tonight, Friday night. And I have faith that they'll at least make this a series. But the loss of Chris Paul is going to be a big deal. So we'll see how that pans out for the Suns. But they definitely need a win tonight. Then moving on to the New York Knicks versus the Miami Heat series. The Knicks were able to even that series out earlier this week. Jalen Brunson just went off for 30 points and 5 rebounds. Randall finally showed up. He had 25 points, 12 rebounds. Then RJ Barrett, he also had 24 points. And the Knicks got the win, 111 to 105. It actually was a pretty close game for the most part. I mean, the Heat had the lead going into halftime, but then the second half got started, and Jalen Brunson and Randall really just started to get it going. And like I said, RJ Barrett was a huge factor. But also at the same time, there was no Jimmy Butler in this one. He ended up sitting out due to an injury. So the Knicks got a big win. They needed that win because they did not want to go down 0-2, especially heading to Miami. And game three in that series is going to be on Saturday. And then moving on to the Lakers and Golden State Warriors series on Tuesday, the Lakers actually shockingly got the win in Golden State, 117 to 112. And, you know, other than the first quarter, the Lakers were pretty much dominating this game. Anthony Davis, he went off. He had 30 points and 23 rebounds. So he had a double-double. And then, of course, LeBron also had a double-double. He had 22 points and 11 rebounds. And it was just kind of an off game for the Golden State Warriors. I actually wasn't that surprised they weren't playing as well as they normally do. And that's just because they were coming off of a huge Game 7 win. And then also Anthony Davis just went off. So the Lakers had some time to rest because then, of course, last night's game, the true Lakers showed up. They got stomped by the Golden State Warriors, 127 to 100. It was like the Lakers didn't even know they were in the freaking playoffs because it was such a pathetic game. I mean, it was kind of close in the first quarter. And then after that, the Golden State Warriors just took off from there. As a matter of fact, I actually turned the game off and fell asleep about with like 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter because that's how terrible this fucking game was going. I knew the Lakers weren't turning shit around because it was just pathetic. And so now the series is tied 1-1 heading into game three, which is on Saturday night. But, you know, it was kind of a typical Lakers game. We definitely go as Anthony Davis goes. Now, as I mentioned in game one, Anthony Davis, huge game, big win. Well, in yesterday's game, Anthony Davis was pretty much MIA yesterday. He had a bad game and we got our asses stomped. Now, it's not just on him. It's just you tend to notice, especially as a Lakers fan, when Anthony Davis is playing well, we play well. We usually get wins. When he sucks, we usually lose. It's just a deciding factor. There were lots of problems with the team last night, but also the Golden State Warriors do what the Golden State Warriors do. Klay Thompson had 30 points last night. Steph Curry had 20 points and 12 assists. So these guys are getting right back into it. These look like the old Splash Brothers, okay? And then, of course, Draymond Green, he had a good game last night. Wiggins stepped it up. So looking like the typical Lakers of old. We do head back to L.A. on Saturday, so I don't know if that's going to give them much of a boost, but not surprised that that's how the Lakers ended things last night. And then we did have a little bit of other NBA news. Mike Budenholzer was fired yesterday as the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. No real shock here, just because, I mean, the Bucks were the top team this year. I said it, they were my pick for the championship this year, and they got ousted in the first round. And that's pathetic. That's very pathetic. When you are the top team in the league, you should not be ousted in the first round by a play-in team, nonetheless. And then, you know, last year they didn't excel. They were also a really good team last year, and they ended up getting, I can't remember when they lost in the playoffs last year, but I think it might have been the second round. Hell, it might have even been the first round last year, but they didn't do anything last year. And then, of course, they're 2 years removed from the championship a couple years ago. But at the end of the day, it was a ton of coaching mistakes in that first round series. That loss to the Miami Heat. So it's really no shock that they let Budenholzer go, just because I kind of feel like at this point in time, the Bucks need to kind of revamp their team. Of course, around Giannis, you got to hang on to Giannis. I think you still got to hang on to Middleton, but there's other guys on the team that are starting to get older, and I kind of feel like they need to have this young renaissance movement of just kind of shifting some younger guys in and taking some older guys out, and that's probably what they need to do. But they also needed a change at the coaching position. So the Milwaukee Bucks are now looking at filling that position as their head coach. So we'll see how that goes. Now moving on to the week of baseball. Let's start with on Monday night, Alex Verdugo of the Boston Red Sox hit his third walk-off hit of the season. And it turned out to be a home run, and that's actually a Red Sox. It's a huge Red Sox achievement for them, and then it's also a baseball achievement as well. I can't remember what the record is, but I think it might be 5 walk-offs in one season. But Verdugo has had 3 so far this season. Like I said, it was a home run against the Toronto Blue Jays. Nonetheless, their division opponent. The Red Sox are actually on a 6-game winning streak right now, so they're actually having a really solid weekend. This American League East is just battering each other up, but they're all damn good teams right now at this point. But it was a 6-5 win. Like I said, Verdugo got the walk-off, and he's just really had a solid season for the Boston Red Sox. Then on Tuesday, Ryan Mountcastle of the Baltimore Orioles, he had yet another 5-RBI night. He had 2 home runs, 5 RBIs in a win against the Kansas City Royals, 11-7, and he actually did hit 2, basically a game tying, and then had a hand in the game winning runs as well. So Mountcastle, he is having a huge season right there with the rest of the Baltimore Orioles. Like I said, this American League East is just one hell of a division. I mean, you've got the Red Sox, like I just said, on a 6-game winning streak. You've got the Toronto Blue Jays, who have just been lights out this season. You've got the Orioles, who've been one of the biggest surprise teams of the season and have yet to fall off. Then, of course, you've got the Rays, who are the top team in the league at this point. And then you have the Yankees, even though they're at the bottom of the division right now, they're still a good team. They're just kind of going through that injury point in the season, and they're just playing down right now, but I still expect them to be right in it. But the American League East is out of control right now. I mean, what if we get all 5 teams somehow into the playoffs? I don't think that's possible. Or maybe it is. That would just be crazy to see all of them get into the playoffs. And then, of course, on Wednesday night, Shohei Ohtani is still breaking records and still doing crazy things as well. He, in a win against the St. Louis Cardinals, a 6-4 win against the St. Louis Cardinals, he had 13 strikeouts, which puts him at 500 career strikeouts already in his short Major League Baseball career. But the record-breaking part is, of course, since he's been playing pitcher and hitter, he is now only the second player all time. Of course, Babe Ruth was the first to do it, but now Shohei Ohtani in 2023 is now the second player all time to have 500 strikeouts and 100 home runs in his career. So congratulations to him in that big win against the St. Louis Cardinals. And speaking of the St. Louis Cardinals, how shocking is it right now that they are the worst team in the league? They are the worst. They are in last place. Who would have thought? And they're not. Their roster is a good roster. They have a lot of good players. It's just for some reason this team cannot get it going. They got blown up yesterday. Flaherty, they had to take him out. He had just a ton of earned runs in the game. They just are not doing well, especially at starting pitching. They're able to get some runs, but overall, this is just a very, very weird and very underachieving team, especially when you have just really terrible teams out there like the Oakland A's and the Washington Nationals, and you got the St. Louis Cardinals right now in last place. They are awful, too. But it is kind of funny because I did mention last week how the A's and the Cincinnati Reds set records for lowest stadium attendance at both of their stadiums a couple weeks ago. Well, I mean, you look at the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'm not gonna lie. Shout out to those fans because they're still filling the stadium. Their team sucks, and they're still going to games. I mean, I saw a day game the other day earlier in the week that they were playing, and the majority of this, it looked like it was practically sold out. I mean, of course, there was empty seats here and there, but I mean, for the most part, for a day game, it was like jam-packed. It was crazy. So shout out to these St. Louis Cardinals fans. Those are some real deal fans right there, because they're actually showing up and their team is not showing up. So it's just very odd to see that some of these stadiums, you'll see like nobody in it. Even some of these San Francisco Giants games I'm watching. Now, I will say Bay Area fans are known to be bandwagon-ass fans. Other than 49er fans, San Francisco 49er fans, they're pretty loyal. But overall, Bay Area fans are mostly fair-weather motherfuckers who don't show the fuck up for games and don't watch games unless they're winning. And San Francisco Giants fans, they are completely fair-weather fans. And I've seen a few games this season where I'm like, man, this is looking bad for a Giants game. Because, I mean, when we're good, we can sell that shit out. I mean, it's usually full. But there's been some games this season. I watched like a Saturday day game, and there was not a lot of people in the stands, and it was weird. Like I said, lots of Bay Area fans are very, very fair weather. All right, and then we also have some big fights this weekend, beginning with UFC 288. In the Bantamweight Championship belt title, we have Aljamain Sterling, who is the current belt holder right now. His record is 22-3. He is going up against Henry Cejudo, who is coming out of retirement. He is 16-2. I like both of these fighters. Sterling, I think, has suffered some. I mean, while he's been the champ and the title holder for 2 years now, year and a half, he's held the title for a minute. But unfortunately, two of his fights have been, he's just been on the wrong end of just the way you don't want to win these ways. And the way he became the title holder was a couple years ago. He fought against Peter Yan, and Yan actually got disqualified for an illegal hit. And so Sterling became the title holder basically just by default. And even he said, that's not how you want to win, but hey, he's the champ, so who cares? But then he did fight Yan the next time, and he did get the win then. But then, unfortunately, in his last fight against TJ Dillashaw, right out the gate, Dillashaw dislocates his shoulder. And he was so ineffective that even you could tell Sterling is like, I don't want to beat the crap out of this dude because I could tell he's completely helpless, but I have to. And it's amazing that Dillashaw was even able to survive the first round, because he did. He got through the first round, and I mean, really, like, the bell rang, and basically Dillashaw's arm dislocated within, like, 15, 20 seconds of the start. And you could tell, because even the judges are like, what happened? He just winced. And he was just so ineffective. He was on the ground. And Sterling is just getting in some great hits. And then the round ends. The first round ends. Dillashaw goes back to his corner. And they're able to pop his shoulder back into place. Because it wasn't a bad, bad dislocation. There's a couple different versions of dislocations. And his was able to just massage back in. And it went back in place. And they let him go back out for the second round. It popped out again. And then Sterling was just able to get on top of him, and he got the TKO, of course. And so that's not, once again, that's not really a way you want to win, but you still are the champ. But Cejudo is coming out of retirement. And this guy is, if you haven't seen this dude fight, I mean, I think the last time he fought was in 2020, if I recall. But this guy he looks like a killer teddy bear. Like, you look at him at first and you're like, oh, what a cute little guy. You just like kind of want to pinch his cheeks. You see him in the ring and this dude will fuck you up. I mean, first of all, he's got, at all levels of wrestling, this guy is tops. And before he retired on top as well. So this guy was the king in this weight class. And I think we're definitely going to get a great fight between the two of them, because they're both excellent wrestlers. I mean, that's really Sterling's thing, is he's a great, great wrestler. And so is Cejudo. But Cejudo also can deliver a blow. Sterling is taller than him and has a little bit more of a reach. So that's definitely going to be an advantage for him. But to me, Cejudo is that dude where it doesn't matter how tall you are. It doesn't matter how big you are. This guy will fuck you up. And this is a tough one for me to pick because Cejudo's been removed from the octagon for 3 years now. So it's tough to really pick that guy, especially going up against an Aljamain Sterling because this is a legit contender. But hey, John Jones took time off and look at where he's at. So I am picking Cejudo in this one just because I think he's ready to go. He's taken the time off and he really did dominate the bantamweight division for quite some time. He's a damn good fighter, and I think Cejudo's going to get the win. I think it will go the distance. I wouldn't be shocked if one of these guys gets the other to submit because they're, like I said, they are both great wrestlers. But I think it's going to go the distance. I think it's going to go to the scorecards. But in the end, I'm going to go with Cejudo gets the win this weekend at UFC 288. Then, of course, in boxing, my man, Canelo Alvarez, he is fighting in Guadalajara, Mexico. Ay, 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 Canelo de Mayo. Love me some Canelo Alvarez. He is going up against John Ryder. So Canelo's record is a 58-2-2, and John Ryder is 32-5. I honestly don't know a whole lot about Ryder. I did watch some of his highlights yesterday. I feel like he's going to be a good opponent for Canelo, but there really wasn't much that impressed me about him. So I kind of feel like Canelo, not only do I think he's the better fighter, but Canelo is fighting in Mexico for the first time in a few years. I can't recall the last, I think it was 2017-ish. Around that's about the last time, I believe, he fought there. I'm pretty sure I'm wrong on that date, but I know it's been a minute since he's fought in Mexico. And of course, if you don't know, Canelo is Mexican. That's why this is a big deal. And it's over Cinco de Mayo weekend. So that's why I said Canelo de Mayo. But I think Alvarez is going to, he's got a lot to prove. If he were to retire today, in my opinion, he definitely is one of the greatest boxers of all time, and most certainly of this generation. But his last two or three matches that he's had, even the ones he's won, it wasn't a typical Canelo type of domination. So I feel like he has to come out big, and because this is his home. This is Guadalajara, Mexico. So I do think the judges, and this is what all of us boxing fans know, if you are a boxing fan, if you are a fighter, if you have anything to do with boxing, we all know. Sometimes the judges, they're on the take, or they just go with the flow, meaning like, Floyd Mayweather won a lot of his fights, close fights, because the judges were in his favor, because Mayweather ruled Vegas in his heyday. And so you, of course, are going to lean towards Mayweather in these closer fights, and that's kind of what I feel like is going to happen with this one. If Alvarez doesn't get the knockout, or if Ryder doesn't get the knockout, and it goes to the scorecards, and it's a close one, they're definitely going to lead towards Alvarez because, hello, he's the Mexican in the building, and this is his homecoming. He is the greatest, one of the greatest pound-for-pound boxers of all time. And so I, if it goes to the cards, I feel like it's definitely going to go in Alvarez's favor. But I just feel like he's got a lot to prove with this fight because the last couple of fights have not been that impressive from him. And I feel like he's going to come out big against Ryder. And I actually do think he's going to get the knockout. I'm not sure what round I'm going to go because I don't think Ryder is not a chump. He's not a chump boxer. He's definitely capable of the knockout as well. But I just see Alvarez getting that win this weekend on Canelo de Mayo. All right, now moving on to my top five this week. Since Steph Curry had that huge Game 7 win against the Sacramento Kings last weekend, and it was a historic playoff performance, I felt like this week's top five, top five greatest NBA playoff performances would be a good idea. because, you know, we are in the heat of the playoffs, and there have been some great, amazing, just individual performances. This is by one player in one game, and it was a deciding factor, really, in each of these series as well. Not every one of these teams went on to win the NBA Finals, but, I mean, they were just pivotal moments for these players in their history of them and their and just their building of their resume. I mean, because we all know, at least I, the way I judge all athletes, you have to show up when it matters the most. In the regular season, yes, it matters, but the playoffs is when it matters the most. And that's why, you know, like Steph Curry did it last night. Hell, Steph Curry has been so fucking consistent throughout the playoffs, throughout his entire career, but right now, this guy is on some. So that's what I'm saying is, like, you respect that. I watch that and I go, man, this is just crazy to see the shots that he's still making at the critical points in time, getting the big shots, making the big wins. And that's what all these top five greatest NBA playoff performances are. They are just pivotal. Two of them, my top two, are two of the most, like, we talk about them still to this day. When you think of pivotal playoff moments, the top two, they could be alternated, in my opinion. But they are just moments where you, when you talk about the playoffs and, you know, you hear the pregame talk, they always bring up these two moments. They're just seared in your head if you are a basketball fan. So let's get right to it. At number five on my top five greatest NBA playoff performances, I know this is going to be shocking to y'all, but I put LeBron James on here because when I started thinking of this list, I'm like, I remember this game. Now, there's been a couple times where LeBron has really taken over a playoff game, but this one, to me, it was probably the first, we all knew LeBron, you just heard about it, how he was going to be great, how he was going to do this, that, and the other. This was the year he really broke out, and it's Game 5, 2007 Eastern Conference Semifinals against the Detroit Pistons. Now, this Detroit Pistons team, they dominated the Eastern Conference from this this time period between, what was it, 04 when they beat the Lakers? Was it 03, 04 when they beat the Lakers in the finals? And then they had this stretch between, like, then 2003 to 2008, 2009, where they really were a very, very competitive championship-caliber team. And this Cleveland Cavaliers team, because this is when LeBron played for the Cavaliers, this was a pretty good team. I mean, they were the number two seed that season, but it was all about LeBron that year. And, I mean, he really just took, not only did he take over that season, but he took over this game, Game 5. And with 7 minutes and 48 seconds left to go in the fourth quarter, Detroit was leading the way for the most part. But then LeBron took over, and he just went off. So the last Cleveland Cavalier to score any points was Zydrunas Ilgauskas in the fourth quarter with 7:48 left to go. LeBron would go off and score the next 25 points, and he would score the last 29 of the last 30 points for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And in this run, he would end up getting the game-tying shot to send it into overtime. And then they would actually go into double overtime, and he ended up having the game-winning layup in double overtime to go on and get a huge win for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He ended up having 48 points, but this was just an all-around, straight-up domination. You want to see one player, I mean literally one player, take over a game and win the whole game for his mid-tier team? Wow, it was crazy. Crazy to watch, and I always think about it too. When I think about LeBron's career, I always think about that game. Now, like I said, there's a few other big moments in his career that he's had in the playoffs, but this one to me was like his breakout. It was like, LeBron is here and he's queer and he's staying. Get used to it, motherfuckers. And he's still here, pissing us off and playing at a high level. But this was when he really stepped it up. He really was a one-man show that night, and he took it to a damn good Detroit Pistons team. I mean, if you remember that Pistons team, not only were they known for making the big shot with Chauncey Big Game Billups, but they were a defensive force, and they couldn't stop LeBron James that night. And he went off, and they would ultimately go on to win that series, and they would ultimately go on to the first ever time LeBron James would go to the NBA Finals in his career. They would get swept by the San Antonio Spurs, though. But if you want to see one player literally take on an entire team, that's basically what LeBron James did in that game. Then, at number four on my top five greatest NBA playoff performances, I have Shaquille O'Neal. Game one of the 2001 Western Conference semifinals versus the Sacramento Kings, or as Shaq would call them, the Sacramento Queens. Now, this was when this rivalry was actually a rivalry, but this was also when the Lakers were just so damn good. But this Kings team was good as well. You know, they had Mike Bibby. They had Chris Webber. They had Stojakovic. I mean, this was a damn friggin' good team. But Shaq was that dude. If you do not remember Shaquille O'Neal, I feel sorry for you, because this was such an utter domination. And Shaq is another dude who had so many dominating games throughout his career in the playoffs. And this was just one of them. So since 1986... there have only been 8 times in the playoffs where a player has scored 40 points and had 20 rebounds. Shaq has 4 of those. 4. So there's only 4 other times that that's happened. Bill Russell, I imagine, is one of them, because he's going to be on this list, by the way. Spoiler alert. But Shaq does have 4 of those 8. On this night against the Sacramento Queens, he had 44 points, 21 rebounds, and 7 blocks. And he just dominated them. He was in the paint, just, get out of my way, bitch. That's my ball. Let me just yank this shit into the basket. Like, oh my God. It was so much fun to watch Shaq just turn these Kings into Queens. They didn't even think about lighting the stupid-ass beam this in the 2001 Western Conference semifinals. It was, straight domination by Kobe and Shaq, but this was Shaq's night. This was when Shaq was just, he was an MVP level player, and it is one of my favorite, it was a fun series to watch. This is just one of my favorite, though, times being a Lakers fan, just watching Shaq and Kobe and Derek Fisher. Oh my God, he had a great game saving shot as well in this game, but I mean, it was all about Shaq and his straight up domination in this playoff game. And the Lakers would not only go on to win this series, but they would go on to win the NBA Finals, their second of their three-peat. Now at number three on my top five greatest NBA playoff performances, the guy I just mentioned, Bill Russell. Game 7 of the 1962 NBA Finals versus my Los Angeles Lakers. One of the many times Bill Russell dominated them in the NBA Finals. And this was a game 7, which means it's the most important game of the NBA Finals, because it's win or go home in this one. This is for everything. Well, Bill Russell showed the fuck up in this one. He had 30 points and 40 rebounds. Yeah, 40 rebounds. That is an NBA Finals record that still stands to this day. This is still a huge rivalry, but this is where this Lakers-Celtics rivalry started with this Bill Russell era. But, 1962, that was, the middle of it. That was kind of towards the end of his career. I mean, he really dominated. And it was actually really quite funny to watch these highlights. Actually, it was quite funny to watch a lot of these highlights, because there were a few times where I was like, where's the score? Even in this 2001 Western Conference semifinals the Lakers played, the score wasn't always at the bottom of the screen or the corner of the screen, it's always up there 24/7. The whole game, you've got the score right there. Basketball did not used to do that, especially in Bill Russell's era, but it was kind of even shocking where I'm like, where's the score in 2001? And yeah, it wasn't there. It's weird to watch old highlights and say, where's the score? And it would show up at random times, but it never shows up when you're watching 1962 highlights. But it was funny to watch them in black and white. But Bill Russell, man, he was something else. That guy, he was always in the right spot at the right time. And watching him score points, he is just flying everywhere. And this was a damn good Lakers team. I mean, Elgin Baylor dropped 61 points in this series. So this was with Jerry West. And so Bill Russell, I mean, watching him just dominate, because while he was technically the biggest guy on the court, there's other big guys on the court with him. This is basketball. But, I mean, it's like he is always in the right place at the right time, always making the big basket when he needs to. And he was just high-flying, always in there. And he wasn't really like a force like how Shaq was, you know, where Shaq would just throw elbows and he's the biggest dude. And it's like, get the fuck out of my way. No, Bill Russell is just like, what I like about watching old highlights, especially like this era of basketball when Bill Russell played and Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor and Jerry West, they pass the ball a lot. And I mean, that's how you set up the play. And I mean, I've had this conversation with basketball fans where it's nice to watch old school basketball where they set up the play because they don't do that much anymore. The Golden State Warriors are probably the closest team to doing that at this point in time. But for the most part, setting up the plays the way they used to in the 60s and 70s and 80s, they most certainly don't do it anymore. But when you watch it, and I was watching the highlights last night, I'm like, man, this is fun to watch these guys just pass the ball like 97 times and then finally shoot the ball in it. But it's like, the way they do it is like, I'm not like a ballet fan, so I've never really watched a ballet, but I imagine watching these guys pass the ball is kind of like watching a perfect ballerina doing their thing, like, because they just look amazing doing it. And like I said, though, Bill Russell always in the right spot at the right time. That's why this guy is a legend. But oh, it was fun to watch those old ass 1962 highlights, except for watching the Lakers lose. I didn't like losing that, even though I was nowhere near being born at the time. I was pissed off that they lost. All right, now we are at the Trop 2. Greatest NBA playoff performances of all time. Like I said, we can alternate these two. But there's a reason why. I mean, of course, my Laker bias is going to show, of course. But there's a reason why I put number one at number one. But the reason why I put number two at number two, it is Michael Jordan, of course. The flu game. Now, they call it the flu game, but we all know now it wasn't actually the flu that he had. It was actually food poisoning. If you don't know, Michael Jordan, the night before game 5 of the NBA finals against the Utah Jazz, this was in 1997, they were, of course, playing in Utah, and, Michael Jordan got a hankering for some pizza, and it was like 2 in the morning, it was a random time at night, so not a lot of pizza places were open, you know, Michael Jordan ended up ordering a pizza. They knew, the people making the pizza knew Michael Jordan is the one who made the order. And they're Utah Jazz fans, so they didn't want Michael Jordan to have a good game the next game. And so they apparently put like old ingredients or some shit on this pizza. And essentially Michael Jordan ended up getting food poisoning and shitting and puking his guts out all night and all day before this game. And it was very, very questionable if Michael Jordan was going to come in and play this game. So, of course, I had to put the flu game in because it is one of the... This is why you love sports, to be quite honest. Like, to watch the greatest do what the greatest do at that level and in just the craziest circumstances, this is what it's all about. And that's why it has to be either number one or two on your list of greatest NBA playoff performances. For me, it's two. And the reason why it's two is because it's mostly because he was sick. He did drop 38 points, but that's kind of that's typical Michael Jordan night. But it was really just because you could tell he was sick as hell. And I mean, really. I feel like we've all had food poisoning at some point. And if you haven't, you're probably going to get it at some point. And if you don't know, it's a pretty terrible 24 hours. You're shitting and puking your guts out. And just imagine going out and playing a basketball game, the most important basketball game of your career. And you're Michael Jordan. Because at this point, it's 1997. Michael Jordan owns the NBA at this point in time. We expect him to walk into the finals and win. And he did what we expected. That's what's so amazing about the flu game. So like I said, it was up in the air whether or not he was going to play all day. So he comes out, he plays, and he plays really effectively. I mean, he knocks down a clutch three to take the lead at 90-88. And I mean, the Jazz really, for the most part, had the lead for the majority of this game. It was really the fourth quarter. Michael Jordan was knocking down the big plays. The rest of his team, of course, was making big plays. But Jordan, he didn't look like he was sick at all until the moment Scottie, he's just like hanging off of Scottie Pippen because you could just tell he's so exhausted. I mean, as I said, if you got food poisoning, you are so dehydrated because everything's coming out of both ends. It's difficult to keep up and stay hydrated. I mean, if you've got food poisoning, it's coming out of both ends. You just need to keep drinking that water. But I can't imagine playing an entire basketball game, which he did, and he was just hanging off Scottie Pippen, and it's an image that is seared in all of our basketball fan brains for life. And that is just why you watch sports. And that's why it's got to be one of the top moments for NBA playoff performances, because, whoa, that is what Jordan do. That is, it's just an amazing thing to watch. Just somebody at the pinnacle of their career do that and come out just exhausted and exerted of all energy, and he put it all out there when he needed to. And by the way, the Chicago Bulls would go on to not only win that game that night, but they would go on to win that series as well. Just yet another amazing game in the legend that is Michael Jordan. All right, and now the number one top five greatest NBA playoff performance of all time, that would be Magic Johnson. Now, of course, you're going to say, oh, your Laker bias is showing, but real talk, come on, man. This is game six of the 1980 NBA Finals versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Magic Johnson is a 20-year-old rookie. He played center for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, because Kareem got injured in the previous game beforehand, and he was out. He wouldn't be playing the next game either. He was out. I can't remember what he did. It was something like a torn Achilles. It was a fucked up injury that you ain't coming back from for a minute. And this is a 20-year-old rookie we're talking about. Magic Johnson, if you know, he was well sought after out of college, and he was just, him and Bird were the top guys in that draft, and they both just came out and had phenomenal seasons, and Magic came right in as a rookie, and he's filling in for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a legendary dude who's got the hook shot. Nobody could stop Kareem, but Magic stepped right in, and not only did he play center, but Magic Johnson played every single position on the court, every position from point guard to center. It's a beautiful thing of art to watch. And he just dominated the game, too, at center. For one, he did the hook shot. He did the hook shot. Nobody could duplicate Kareem's hook shot, but Kareem helped him out. I mean, I guess when you've got a front row seat of watching it and you're as good as Magic Johnson, you could try and mimic it. Now, of course, it wasn't as beautiful as Kareem did it, but he did it in the game. His final stat line ended up being 42 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists. Yeah, for a 20-year-old rookie, he would end up winning the finals MVP, of course. But it is one of the greatest playoff performances because it's from a 20-year-old rookie. He was playing a position he had no business really playing. But if you watched Magic Johnson's career over time, I mean, the guy, that's why he's one of the greatest of all time, because he was a total unicorn. He would play every position, and he would dominate every position. So that is why I put it number one, because he, not only did he have to fill in and play center, he's filling in for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest of all time. At that point in time, too, Kareem dominated at center, and Magic did a great job filling in. So that's why I put it at number one. Of course, my Lakers bias is in there, but I just feel like, A, that was a position you shouldn't be in, but he took it and he rode with it. He was a rookie. He was filling in for Kareem, a legend. It was a pivotal game in Philadelphia, nonetheless. And not only did he show up, but it was a pivotal game. They won that night, and he was the finals MVP. So That's why I put it at number one, even though the flu game, if you want to put it up there. Now, of course, like I said, it shouldn't be called the flu game because he did not have the flu. But I think it's easier to call it the flu game because, A, the sick game sounds kind of dumb. The food poisoning game sounds dumb. So we all still call it the flu game, even though it's not technically the flu game. He had food poisoning. But regardless, it was an amazing performance. All five of these were amazing performances. There were even more. It was, like I said, it was difficult to whittle it down for the last three of them, three, four, and five. But one and two, I knew it right off the bat. I was like, oh, flu game's going in there, and Magic Johnson filling in for Kareem. 100% going in there. But all five of them, I feel like, are amazing moments. And, you know, Steph Curry, he's already been showing out. Maybe he's going to have some more amazing moments. I mean, he just killed the Lakers last night and basically single-handedly put away the Kings in the last series. So we'll see what we can expect for the rest of these NBA playoffs. But enjoy this jam-packed weekend of sports. I mean, we got NBA playoffs. We got baseball. And we got fights galore. So happy Canelo de Mayo, everybody. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.